Hi, this is Russ Taft.
Hi, this is John Olifanti.
Hi, this is John Schlippen-Petra.
Hi, this is Kim Boyce.
Hey, everybody, Stephen Curtis Chapman here, and you are listening to Jesus Freaks Final to Digital.
Hi, I'm Jason Huddle, host of Jesus Freaks Final to Digital. Before we get into this week's program, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for downloading this episode and giving us a listen. If you really like what you hear, we'd love to have your support. How can you do that, you say? Well, I'm glad you asked. Simply visit patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and become a monthly sponsor. Now, you can do that for as little as two measly dollars per month, or you can go higher and get special perks, like advance access to episodes when available, the opportunity to submit questions I will ask our artists on future episodes, and even your very own Jesus Freaks t-shirt. Again, that's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And hey, if you'd like your business or organization to become a sponsor of this program, let us know by visiting our website, JesusFreaksPodcast.com, and click on the Become a Sponsor link at the bottom of the page. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get on with the show.
During an age when the secular music world had seen popularity with groups like the Ramones and the Clash, the CCM industry was struggling to find its answer on the punk rock scene. That was until Mike Stan and the Altar Boys came along. Today on Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, we'll talk to Mike Stan about how the Altar Boys came to be and what they've been doing since they officially broke up in the early 90s. Mike will even play some songs for us and will reveal some startling revelations like this one.
And the interesting thing was, when I first started the group, I didn't want to be the lead singer. I didn't want to be the guy that mainly spoke. And I didn't want to be the main songwriter.
Plus, we'll even play some samples from their 2018 release, No Substitute. That's all coming right up on this Christian punk rock-filled episode of Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a presentation of Cavco Media Group. I'm your host, Jason Huddle.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the program. Today we have a very special guest with us, Mike Stand of the Altar Boys. And for those of you young whippersnappers out there, before there was Green Day, there was the Altar Boys. These guys were cutting edge Christian music. I remember, Mike, hearing When You're a Rebel, and I had never heard anything like it from a Christian artist. Ever. It was incredible. You guys were pioneers, man. So
yeah, I had to kind of think about that one while I was writing it. After I wrote it, I had to kind of consider that song a little bit. Yeah, I had run that song by When You're a Rebel by a past couple youth pastors before we did it. So it was quite interesting. Yeah.
Well, I had several friends that they were rebels. They considered themselves rebels, and they were new Christians at the time and trying to kind of find their balance between how do I maintain that persona that I don't conform, but I want to follow Christ. And
Right. They
heard that song and they were hooked.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting tune. When I came up with it, When You're a Rebel, I thought, wait a minute, can I say that? When you're a rebel, to be rebellious is to be rebellious against God. Can I do that? And I wrote, I finished it and I showed it to the guys in the group and I'm like, well, we better ask somebody about this. So we asked several pastors and they said, well, it looks like you kind of redefined the word rebel here.
Right.
So it's okay. And then the whole scripture coming in the beginning. So it was quite an anthem for us. You know, still one of the bigger songs we always played every concert, and a real special song for us, a real special tune.
So you guys started in 81, went all the way into the early 90s before you guys kind of went your own way and did your own thing for a little while, right?
Yeah. So we basically, our first concert was July 1982. And then we took a hiatus in December of 1992. Then we came back, 1997, 2000, 2002, 2004, 2005, and did reunion concerts for a long time, quite a bit. Yeah. And that was cool. Those were great. Worked out good. Cause kind of the way we kind of just stopped playing was not real fun. So the reunion concerts were really cool.
Very cool. And you're still playing today. You're still doing your own thing.
Yeah. I play more rockabilly. So we, 10 years ago, a friend of mine said, you know how to take those Altar Boy songs and make them rockabilly. And I thought, oh, can we do that? He goes, yeah, let me show you how. So we did a couple demos of some of the Altar Boy songs. And I thought that was kind of cool. I said, well, let's just call ourselves the Altar Billies. You know, we're just going to do Altar Boy songs and play a few churches here and there. And I didn't realize that the band would kind of take off on its own identity. And we don't play a lot of churches, not because we don't want to. It's just that we're playing a lot of clubs and street fairs and different things. And it winds up, I'm kind of writing a whole new set of tunes. We don't even do any of the Altar Boys songs. What really started doing, I wrote new ones. And that's kind of what I've been doing this quarantine is writing. I got the next album basically done. So
our listeners can't see this, but you're sitting there with your guitar. You look like you're itching to play. You got something to play for us?
Sure. Well, that's a little bit of When You're Rebel.
Yeah, that sounds great. Hit it.
Well, you don't stick some of the things you see. Well, sin is sin, and that's what you call it to be. Some say sin's on the mind. You stand and stick, and that's not right. Just a condensed version.
Still got it, man. Well, we 35 years down the road from that song being released. And
wrote it early 1985.
Yeah.
So is that 35 years?
Yeah, 35 years.
So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And
now we both feel old.
Well, I'm still able to play. I'm very fortunate.
Yeah.
At this stage of the game to kind of have reinvented myself.
Yeah.
But the message is not changed at all in what I'm doing. I mean, I write a lot of songs about trains these days and the content probably is not as direct, but I always have the gospel in there.
Yeah.
And no matter what I'm doing, it's always in the back or depending on the song in the forefront too. So I have that freedom to kind of put it wherever is appropriate with the lyrics.
Well, I want to get into what you're doing today, but I want to talk first about the No Substitute release that came out a couple of years ago. That was actually, as you said, about 25 years in the making. Tell us a little bit about that, that whole process.
Okay. So we released five records. Okay. Altar Boys One, Rebel, GLM, which is probably our most popular, Against the Grain, Forever Mercy, 1989. And I wanted to start another record. Rick Alba had left the group in 1990, original bass player. And we've got a gentleman by the name of Mark Robertson, who lives in Nashville, played with so many, Rick Elias, so many great groups. And so he came in. Rick was a great songwriter, wrote Life Begins to Cross, It's God's Heart to Cry. But when Mark came in, he brought a breath of fresh air. And I thought, you know, Forever Mercy was a good record, but I wanted to go back to the GLM kind of gut level When You're a Rebel stuff. And so I started writing for that. And I was really excited, wrote No Substitute, wrote all these great songs. We started the recording process, laying down some tracks, and then Mark decided he needed to move, and then Steve left, and it kind of just took the wind out of my sails, and we just decided, well, it's just not meant to be.
Yeah.
We had the songs written. We had the songs arranged. We had almost everything done. The vocals done, guitar parts done. So we shelved it. And, you know, if it's not meant to be, if it's not what God wants, I moved on. I did Clash of Cymbals. I went back to school, had kids, started the Altar Billies. I mean, I was good with that. And, you know, I don't want to be someplace that I'm not supposed to be. So we shelved it. I always thought it was a shame because I come across the demos. I sure like Light of Freedom. I sure like No Substitute. Those were good songs. And sometimes some people bring up the idea, well, you should re-record those and put them out. I'm like, eh, I don't want to do that. I just wasn't into it. So it's interesting how it happened. So I just completely let it go. And then 2017, something happened that was very difficult for me. I developed severe vocal issues, not just nodules. I had hemorrhaging on my vocal cords.
Just straining them straining them too hard?
You know, there's a combination. It was like the perfect storm. Yeah, but basically that. But it was a combination of things through colds, through playing, through doing these records where I'd spend with the Altar Billies, you know, 100, 150 hours in the vocals. And it just was the perfect storm. And so I tried for 6 months to get over it with vocal rest and every concoction you can name and couldn't. And finally, I had to have surgery and I had to take 3 weeks off. So that happened in September 25th, 2017. And while I was kind of getting ready to do that, the guy makes a lot of our videos. I mean, several people, but particularly Chad Ashton, the guy who makes our videos, said, you know, you should take a look at that No Substitute. And I'm like, what? You know, what am I going to do with that? And he goes, send me what you have. I want to listen to it. All right. Because he'd done all our videos. If you've seen any of the Altar Billies videos, a lot of the Altar Boys videos, Chad did it. So I did that. And he says, you know, you ought to really release this. And I'm like, I don't even know if I can get the mechanism up to listen to it. So I had the operation. I was fine. It was success, but I couldn't talk for like 2 weeks. So I got up I said, what else am I going to do? I'll get up a tape recorder and I'll listen to these songs and see what they sound like. What else am I going to do? Might as well. So I did that and I listened to the tracks and I went, I thought to myself, oh my goodness. And my son was in the house. He was taking care of me after surgery. And I motioned to him to come over and I just pointed to the tracks and wrote down, listen to this. And he's like, what is this? I said, it's No Substitute. And he's like, wow, well, we need to transfer that. When all of our hopes and dreams come crashing down, there's a place in God's heart where those things can be found. And there's no substitute for the hope we found in you. we transferred it over digitally. I made a rough copy and I sent it to the guys, the 10 or 12 songs that we had. Listen to this. And they all listened to it, Jeff, Steve, Mark, and they like, holy cow, what is this? And I like put the question, should we finish it? So that began the process. And it was like one step at a time. I didn't jump into it. We just took one step at a time and I started recording it. I spent about 400 hours on it. And Low Fidelity Records, we did the Kickstarter. And before we know, we had this record out and did a one-off concert in September 2018. It really was a miracle.
It what was really it like to play with those guys again after, what are we talking about, 26 years?
Yeah, we hadn't played together since March 2005. So it was, how long was that, 13 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, and to track everything. So we had the vocals and a lot of the guitars done. So I had to finish drums and bass and add guitars and BGVs. And my son, recording engineer, in fact, he works with Demi Lovato right now and John Legend. And so that's how good he is.
Wow.
And so we just put it together. We worked really hard and it just all fell together. It was a miracle. And it's a great record. It's a great record. My original vocals from 1991 and 93. So I knew I couldn't sing like that. So we did it live. We did a couple songs from there, but that's really high. Songs were really high. Really high. So we put this record out and it's done really good. And it's just unbelievable to be able to finish what you started so many years ago. I didn't even see it coming at all. And it's been received really, really well. The fans love it. They're the ones that supported it. Felt weird to kind of switch from rockabilly back to rock again. That was an interesting, but I mean, what a miracle. Who does that?
Right.
Who does that? No one. And to have the song so good and done, we were very fortunate to have
that. Did it kind of put the bug back in your blood about maybe getting the Altar Boys back together for another run?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm grateful what we were doing. But at the same time, I kind of like where I am musically now. I kind of like doing rockabilly and Carl Perkins and the early Elvis Sun Session stuff and Grady Martin. And so I'm not saying it's a step back. It was great to revisit it. And if it was meant to be some things to do, I would certainly be open. But, you know, just because you can doesn't mean necessarily you should.
Sure. So what are you doing now besides the rockabilly? I mean, tell us about some projects you're working on.
Well, for music, rockabilly, but, you know, I'm mainly a music teacher in the day. So I've been teaching using Google Classroom, which has been kind of interesting, filling my days. In fact, I was rushing around trying to get done with things right now. So teaching band and violin, I've got my master's degree. I've got two teaching credentials. So the rockabilly is on the side, but it's very much a passion. And I'm also very fortunate that I can teach rock. I have a rockabilly group at one of the schools that I'm working with, upright bass, and teaching the Melvis and Carl Perkins. And it's very, very, very cool.
What do you want to play some rockabilly now?
Yeah, I could play a little something. I'd play a new one. Okay. I want a new one I just wrote.
Perfect.
So it's very Perkins, very All Perkins. Right. It's called Nothing Would Surprise Me.
World premiere right here on this program.
Nothing would surprise me, nothing at all. Nothing would surprise me, nothing at all. Nothing would surprise me, nothing would surprise me, nothing at all. Nothing, Elvis is alive, nothing, he just drove on by. Nothing over the Golden Gate, nothing said he was running late. Nothing, guess I've seen enough, the shotgun all done, worn off, but nothing, nothing would surprise me, nothing, nothing at all, nothing, nothing would surprise me, nothing would surprise me, nothing at all, nothing. How about a new guitar? Nothing owned by big rock star. Nothing sitting in the back. Nothing of my new Cadillac. Nothing, guess I've seen enough. The shotgun all done, worn off, nothing. Nothing nothing would surprise me, nothing, nothing at all, nothing, nothing would surprise me, nothing would surprise me, nothing at all, that's right. Nothing, those little green men from Mars again. Nothing, them tinfoil hats. Nothing, they said the earth was flat. Nothing, yes, I've seen enough. They're shocking, done one of those. Nothing, nothing would surprise me. Nothing, nothing at all. Nothing, nothing would surprise me. Nothing would surprise me. Nothing at all. Nothing. Nothing would surprise me, nothing. Nothing would surprise me, nothing. Nothing would surprise me, nothing would surprise me, nothing at all. Oh, yeah.
Nice. Outstanding.
Yeah, that only took me 40 hours to write. Everybody else is doing these virtual. This is kind of the first interview. I just took my energy and I just decided I needed to write some new songs.
Yeah.
Kinda.
So that's how you've been spending your COVID quarantine?
Well, besides teaching and that, and you know, I do 3 mile walks a day. Every day I go out for 3 miles and work out for an hour. But with extra energy I have, my teaching job takes kind of a lot out of me. So it's been nice to be able to get up a little bit later and start my day. Not too much. I'm pretty good at doing what I have to do and be responsible because I'm very grateful for my job. I'm very fortunate. So the Altar Billies, you know, doing that and writing a lot of songs for that. And but again, always thankful for the Altar Boys. Yeah. And we have a real nice Facebook group. And I've been releasing a lot of older videos from the day of us playing and of different bands playing that we played with us. I just released one from Anaheim Vineyard back in 1984 with a band called CIA, Army of Love, Us, and the Lifesavers. And so using that time to stay connected because so many people appreciate the band.
Sure.
And I do too.
Well, you know, the whole point of this program is sort of behind the music and many of the artists that were interviewing like yourself were pioneers. This is, you guys were playing in a time that Christian music, modern Christian music, was really in its infancy. And as I said at the beginning of the segment, you guys were absolutely cutting edge. Like nobody had ever done what you guys were doing. So it was incredible to watch the impression that you guys made on people that probably would not have responded to traditional Christian music, but they responded to you guys. And to think that some of those people that maybe came to your concerts are still living for Christ 35 years later, that's incredible.
That's the amazing thing. But and for us, we were just doing what we were doing. We weren't thinking that we were any more special or do anything really different per se. We just kind of did what felt kind of natural. When I kind of first was like going looking at punk rock and that whole early late 70s, early 80s scene, the music, I just naturally connected to it. I just said, oh yeah, that's just the Beatles sped up a little bit. That's all that is. I can do that. And so I just started writing and the songs just started coming out real quickly in the early 80s. So when we started it, I didn't think, wow, we're just doing something different and this is unique. I thought, well, this is what's working. I can do it. And if things kind of fall into place, great. And July 1982, like I said, was our first concert. And right after that, things just took off. We were doing 10 gigs a month and, you know, snowballed to one song on a compilation record, to the Altar Boys' first record, to the second record, to the third record. And the interesting thing was when we first started the group, I didn't want to be the lead singer. I didn't want to be the guy that mainly spoke. and I didn't want to be the main songwriter.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, we tried to get people. So we had me, well, Jeff Crandall and I were cousins, and we kind of first started. And then I think we got Ron, and we just kept trying to find people to do it. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to lead sing. I'm not a lead singer. We got to get somebody who's going to songwrite. I can't songwrite. And we got to get somebody who's going to talk. I can't speak in front of people. You know, I just was initially not going to do these things, but I was very reluctant, like Moses. Yeah. That's the other guy. That's you know, Paul McCartney and Tom Petty and all those other guys out there. You know, I mean, they're the songwriters. And I just started doing it, coming up with stuff because nobody else was writing anything. Nobody else wanted to lead sing. And at a concert, I looked at anybody else that wanted to talk in front of everybody, but nobody else would do it. So I just took the role. And after a while, it felt comfortable and it worked out. Seemed to be the right thing in the end. So, you know, the Altar Boys just kind of, we never expected to have the records. And we were just happy to play Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa and have a couple of songs recorded. And that would have been good. So it took us down a path and a road that we never thought. And like I said, we were in the middle of it and we never realized how important we were to people because we were had so many different moving parts and so many things going on that, you know, it was tough to keep up with everything. We dashed in and out of cities and recordings and meetings and songwriting and plus our regular life. It's been years down the road, especially right around the No Substitute, realizing people wanted that people came out and with the introduction of social media and Facebook, finding out what people really thought of us and how important we were to people. And years down the line, they would write us long letters. I just never thought of it while I was doing it. We were just so busy.
Favorite Altar Boys song?
Well, I know what song means most to people. That's kind of what I go by. And that's You Found Me and You Are Loved. And I would, you know, You Found Me is real important. That was written in 1982. I wish all of them came that easy. And I wanted to write a song kind of, U2 was popular at the time. I want to write a song kind of like U2. And if not, they ain't like a U2 song. And just did the lyrics and showed it to the guys and saying, oh, this is a really good song. Like, I wrote it in 20 minutes. Can't be that good.
Isn't it funny, though, that the best songs always seem to write themselves?
Well, in theory, I've written some clunkers really fast, but it takes me a long time to write a song, 20 to 40 hours. And, you know, so it just depends. Every song is a little bit different, but, yeah, they don't come like that very often. That was just, I mean, nice song, I guess. So just kind of do it like this and see how it works. And everybody like, oh, I like that song. We like that. You found this song. That's really good. Oh, okay. And it winds up being a song that a lot of people identify. And I realize now that I look back, it really is like, yeah, that's kind of me. Everybody kind of wrote me off. And he found me. And it's interesting. A lot of bands have written since then songs called You Found Me. So, and of course there's You Are Loved that a lot of people like. And I thought that was really cool. I wrote this while I was on vacation with my wife, poor wife. Honey, come in the pool. I got this song, honey. Dude, it's a good one. Hard times in the city. Just see the faces. How can I turn away? Hey man, I'm talking to you, trying to get through. God cares about you more than you think. To all the hearts today. That's a real special one.
Yeah, it takes me back.
Oh, you know that one?
Oh, yeah.
And No Substitute, I think, I mean, I love all the songs. There's some I wasn't going to put on there for No Substitute. And a couple of the guys said, you got to put that song. You're crazy. You can't leave that one off. But the one song that always kind of, I remember writing and that I always thought it's, too bad that it never got released. A song called Light of Freedom. That was one that got played quite a bit. Still played.
Mike Stan from the Altar Boys, thank you for treating us to your music, your wonderful music. Thank you for what you've been doing for Christian music for the last 40 years. And really appreciate you being on the program today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a huge blessing to share all the good things that God has done through me and the band. You know, and thank you so much for kind of, for lack of a better term, keeping the dream alive and keeping the message out there in the forefront, because now more than ever, people need to hear the good news of Christ.
That is the absolute truth. Mike, thanks for being on the program. We hope to hear more from you in the coming months and years. Keep rocking on, man.
All right, brother. Take care.
Well, I kicked the window out from the door.
What a great sport Mike Stand is. I really enjoyed my conversation with him. He is not shy at all to play that guitar, and I love him for it. I know we were having some audio difficulties during the interview that day because of the internet connection, so I hope to have him on again at another time. But Mike, thank you so much for being on the program. It was a hoot to talk to you, and I really enjoyed the music. Mike was very gracious and also sending me a couple tracks from No Substitute that I could use on the program. So as I tease next week's episode, I'm going to let you listen to Light of Freedom from the No Substitute Project. Make sure you tune into next week's episode. Jimmy Ray from Age of Faith is going to be on, and it will be an eye-opening interview. We have a lot of fun, but we also get very serious in talking about his opioid addiction that he suffered after Age of Faith broke up. It is a great testimony. You don't want to miss it. So until next week, you've been listening to Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, presentation of Capco Media Group. I've been your host, Jason Huddle. And here's a little more Altar Boys to take us out. God bless.